You've been having a lot of really severe headaches lately, leaving you feeling drained and weak. Your coworker pointed out that you looked pale and sickly when you were at work yesterday, which only added to your growing concern for your health. As the days went on, you could feel your heart pounding in your chest more frequently, and you found yourself drenched in sweat for no reason at all. You've been dealing with this a lot lately, but now things have taken a turn for the worse. You've noticed the pins and needles happening more frequently, which has only added to your concerns. You decide it's time for you to see a doctor. Hello and welcome to Anatomy of Illness. Today's episode is about pheochromocytoma, which was mentioned in episode 3, Takotsubo syndrome. Before we get into the condition, we're going to start with the history. So why we know this condition exists? We begin in 1886. Felix Frankl and Max Schutelius first described the case of pheochromocytomas occurring in an 18-year-old woman. She had collapsed and died suddenly. Before passing away, she had recurring episodes of palpitations, which is the feeling of your heart racing or pounding, headaches, vomiting, a strong pulse, and pallor, which is an unhealthy pale appearance, kind of a ghostly white, and retinitis, which is inflammation of the retina. On autopsy, they found myocardial hypertrophy. So this is an enlargement of the heart due to a thickening of the heart muscle. Arterial changes were also found in the kidneys, indicating hypertensive vascular disease. So high blood pressure causing vascular changes indicative of chronic disease states. This autopsy also found tumors in both adrenal glands. So bilateral pheochromocytoma. Felix Frankl was the clinician previously seeing the young woman as her doctor before she passed. After the tumors were discovered, he made the assumption that the symptoms were caused by a chemical substance secreted by the tumor cells and passed into the venous blood. He had correctly assumed the adrenal medulla being an endocrine organ. The product secreted would not be figured out until about 10 years later. An endocrine organ is an organ that secretes hormones to control metabolism, growth and development, reaction to stress, and many other vital processes. Professor Rudolf Meyer assisted the duo by performing the autopsy in what would eventually become a key discovery for pheochromocytoma. Max Schutelius did the histological investigation on the tumors from the autopsy. In his histological investigation, he found that parts of the tumors that were fixed in Mueller's solution, which contains chromate salts, changed color. They turned brown. This is known as a chromaffin reaction due to a catecholamine oxidation. Dr. Jokichi Takamine and Mr. Kiso Yunaka in the 1890s discovered crystallized adrenaline due to an experiment being left out overnight. In 1904, noradrenaline was synthesized by Stoltz. These two catecholamine hormones would become important in the 1950s. In 1908, Alizeas and Peyron introduced the term paraganglioma as a way to describe tumors arising from the paraganglia, which is the embryonic nervous tissues, normally found in the blood vessels, nerves, and adrenal glands. This term would be used to describe tumors that were not located in the adrenal glands but had a chromaffin reaction. In 1910, Suzuki reported an association between neurofibromatosis, a condition causing tumors to form on various nervous tissues, more on that in a future episode, and pheochromocytoma. In 1912, Pick coined the term pheochromocytoma to describe tumors whose cells had an affinity for chromium salts, so tumor cells that had the chromaffin reaction. In 1922, Lavie, Tinel, and Dumas described the clinical condition caused by the tumors due to a 28-year-old woman having paroxysmal hypertensive crises, so sudden episodes of severe high blood pressure. On autopsy, they found a pheochromocytoma. Vaquez. Yes, the same one from episode 6. And Dontilot in 1926 made the first clinical diagnosis of pheochromocytoma. However, surgical removal was not performed as a patient refused surgery. The tumors were found on autopsy. Again in 1926, in Switzerland, Roux successfully removed a pheochromocytoma. Also in 1926, C.H. Mayo also successfully removed a pheochromocytoma at the Mayo Clinic in the United States. In 1943, the first case of familial pheochromocytoma was documented by Hyman and Mencher. In 1945, Roth and Cavale discovered that if you gave a person with pheochromocytoma histamine, you could cause an attack of hypertension and other symptoms. This was a valuable discovery as it gave the ability to detect the condition in patients that had normal blood pressure. In 1947, Goldenberg discovered that intravenous use of benzodioxin, an adrenergic blocking agent, would lower the blood pressure of patients with pheochromocytoma dramatically, but had no effect on those with normal hypertension or regular blood pressure. Holton in 1949 and von Uhler and Hellner in 1951 demonstrated that patients with pheochromocytoma excreted excess adrenaline and noradrenaline, as well as occasionally dopamine. Lund in 1952 also demonstrated this with excess levels in the plasma and urine of patients. Isieri in 1951 reported that using phentolamine intravenously could lower blood pressure in pheochromocytoma more reliably, so it became a popular drug for detecting tumors. In 1952, DeCourcy and DeCourcy, and in 1961, Sipple reported on the association between pheochromocytoma and thyroid carcinomas, which is another type of cancer located in the thyroid. More on this in a later episode. In 1956, Will Malherbe identified the presence of both dopamine and dihydroxyphenylalanine, also known as DOPA. Yes, the DOPA we use in Parkinson's disease in a pheochromocytoma tumor itself. In 1961, Cushman and Manick found parathyroid adenomas, a type of cancer in the parathyroid, occurred in some patients with thyroid carcinomas and pheochromocytoma. In 1962, von Hippel-Lindau disease, which is a combination of retinal angioma and hemangioblastomas, was confirmed to occasionally exist in patients with pheochromocytoma. In 1968, Steiner suggests that familial pheochromocytomas in association with multiple endocrine tumors be called multiple endocrine neoplasia type 2, or MEN type 2 for short. Neoplasia is a term normally meaning tumor, both cancerous or non-cancerous. Multiple endocrine neoplasia will be described in a future episode. The multiple endocrine neoplasia was further described also in the 1960s. So patients with a combination of pheochromocytoma, medullary thyroid carcinoma, and mucosal neuromas, as well as sometimes marfanoid habitus, were designated either MEN type 2B or MEN type 3. A mucosal neuroma is a tumor of the nerve tissue normally found in the gastrointestinal tract. More on this in a future episode. Marfanoid habitus is a condition resembling Marfan syndrome. With these conditions, you normally see tall stature, arm span larger than height, and flat facial features, and occasionally intellectual disability. These two will be described in later episodes. In 1981, Bravo developed the clonidine suppression test. This was helpful in differentiating between pheochromocytic hypertension and neurogenic hypertension. So hypertension caused by pheochromocytoma or hypertension caused by the nervous system. This test was about 67% accurate. Clonidine is an adrenergic agonist specifically targeting the alpha-2 receptors. The mutation of the RET proto-oncogene on the long arm of chromosome 10, which likely causes MEN2A, was discovered in around 1987. So who is likely to get pheochromocytoma and what are the genetics? Pheochromocytoma is a rare cancer. It is on the NORD rare disease list. Only 2% of adrenal masses are actually pheochromocytoma. The condition affects both men and women equally. It also affects all races equally. It is an equal opportunist. It is believed around 20 to 30% of all pheochromocytomas are familial. The first case being mentioned, which was the case discovered by Felix Frankl and friends, has been associated with familial pheochromocytoma, as the generations coming after the young woman, Mina Roll, have had cases of adrenal tumors removed. There are 10 genes linked to susceptibility that have been currently identified. These can be grouped into three clusters based on what genes they are related to. Cluster 1 is the pseudohypoxia subtype. All genes in this subtype are related to cell metabolism and the hypoxia response. Hypoxia is when there is not enough oxygen in the tissues. This includes the SDH gene, or the succinate dehydrogenate gene subunits. There are four of these, A, B, C, and D. There is also the VHL gene, which is different. Both of these genes are important for ubiquination and degradation of hypoxia-inducible factor. Defects can lead to an unregulated or constant activation of hypoxia angiogenesis pathway. Ubiquination is the process of adding ubiquitin to a protein to mark it for degradation. This is essentially breaking down a protein. Angiogenesis is the process of making new blood vessels. Cluster 2 represents the dysregulation of kinase signaling pathways. A kinase signaling pathway is a pathway that alters the activity and expression of proteins. This cluster includes RET, NF1, TMEM127, and the MAX gene. The RET gene, or the receptor tyrosine kinase proto-oncogene, and the NF1, also known as neurofibromatosis type 1 gene, play an important part in oncogenesis, the formation of a cancer. These cells regulate cell differentiation, survival, and proliferation. Proliferation meaning rapid cell growth. The MAX gene, also known as the MYC-associated factor X gene, is also a gene that has been recently linked with hereditary pheochromocytoma. It is a transcription factor gene, meaning it assists in the reading and the transcribing of DNA into RNA to allow for protein production. Cluster 3 is the WNT signaling group. This is determining cell fate, migration, and several other processes during life and embryonic development. WNT meaning wingless related integration site, as it was originally found in the integrase 1 gene in mice and the wingless gene in the fruit fly. This cluster is normally associated with more aggressive tumors and has a worse prognosis. CSDE1 or cold shock containing domain E1. Mutations in this gene are correlated with downregulated or suppressed apoptosis. This is programmed or planned cell death. Normally, when the cell encounters a defect that is unrepairable or in utero development, an example of this is the webbing between the fingers. Yes, there is a point when you did have webbed fingers and toes long before you were born. If you still have this, it is called syndactyly. In this cluster, there is also the MAML3 gene. There are several other genes that I have not mentioned, some of these being hereditary, others can occur randomly. So you may be the first person in your family to have this mutation. So how do we test for it? We use blood tests to assess for plasma levels of metanephrine and norepinephrine. These are metabolites of epinephrine/adrenaline and norepinephrine/noradrenaline, metabolites being a byproduct of the breakdown of a chemical, and a 24-hour urine test, also assessing the levels of these metabolites. These two biochemical tests are between 97 to 99% accurate in detecting pheochromocytomas. Rarely, a clonidine suppression test will be performed. An ECG may be performed to observe if there are abnormalities or changes in the heart rhythm. This can be due to the damage from hypertension or cardiac ischemia. A CT or an MRI will be performed to find the location of the tumor. This allows for the best observation if there are visible metastases as well. So if the cancer has spread elsewhere, like the liver or bones. Once diagnosed, genetic testing may also be suggested. We'll get right into the symptoms and disease presentation right after this break. So what are the symptoms? If you have this condition, you may experience severe headaches, inappropriate sweating, nausea and vomiting, anxiety to the point where you may feel like you're going to die, feeling like your heart is trying to beat out of your chest. This can occur with an abnormally fast heart rate or less often with an abnormally slow heart rate. You can have pain in the chest or abdomen. You can feel very weak. You can feel very fatigued. There may also be unexplained weight loss, issues with the vision, severe constipation, extreme paleness in the face, pins and needles types feelings. Occasionally you may have seizures. Some symptoms are more common in children. These would be things such as frequent urination, being excessively thirsty, and having convulsions. Some of these symptoms will only be present during attacks, others present constantly. This depends on the specific hormones from the tumor, location, and if it is constantly releasing. Each person is different, each tumor is different. So if you were a doctor, what would you see? There would be hypertension. This can either be sustained, which is chronic high blood pressure, labile, which is the blood pressure that fluctuates frequently between high and normal, and paroxysmal. This is episodic and extremely high, normally lasting for a very short amount of time. This can be induced by stressful situations and triggers. Normally, this one is quite dangerous. Hypertension is present in most forms of pheochromocytoma. However, in the familial types, it may not occur. Palpitations with either tachycardia or occasionally bradycardia. You'll also see inappropriate sweating. So they may look very sweaty on the forehead, or if you can see the arms, they may look a bit damp. Nausea and vomiting, severe anxiety. They may complain of a sense of doom, weakness and fatigue. So they may talk about struggling to be able to do the normal tasks, struggling to get out of bed, severe constipation, and on rare occasions, pseudo obstructions. This is when there is a bowel dilation in the absence of any obstruction. Unexplained weight loss. So they've lost a ton of weight, haven't even tried. Visual disturbances. On rare occasion, this can cause acute blindness. When there is sustained hypertension, hypertensive retinopathy can occur. This can cause permanent visual changes to occur, normally being blurred vision and reduced vision. Facial pallor. So this is paleness, looking a bit like they've seen a ghost. Occasionally seizures can also occur. In very rare occasion, if there is intense mesenteric artery vasoconstriction, ischemic enterocolitis with intestinal necrosis can also occur. This can lead to an intestinal obstruction. The mesenteric artery is the artery that feeds the gastrointestinal tract. Vasoconstriction is when the blood vessels tighten to prevent as much blood getting through. Ischemic enterocolitis is an inflammation that can occur anywhere throughout the intestine caused by a lack of blood flow. Endocrosis, meaning tissue death, in an uncontrolled or unplanned manner. Intense vasoconstriction in the cerebral vasculature can also lead to cerebral vasculitis, essentially meaning the blood vessels in the brain can become inflamed. Diarrhea can also occur in certain occasions, depending on what the tumor secretes. This can also lead to electrolyte imbalances in severe cases. In children, polydipsia, polyuria, and convulsions may occur. These attacks can be triggered by palpating the abdomen near the tumor, postural changes, so going from laying to sitting or sitting to standing, trauma and pain, ingesting food with tyramine, think beer, wine, and certain cheeses, anesthesia, as well as many other things that can be triggers. So, how do we treat it? In the best case scenario, surgery. We remove it. This can be done laparoscopically. So this is the version where you have the cameras, the tiny little incisions, you don't open someone up fully. Or if the tumors are very large and there are multiple, it will have to be done open. So you'll have to cut someone open to actually get full access to those tumors. This can be followed with chemotherapy, normally medications like cyclophosphamine, vincristine, and dacarbazine. Radiation therapy may also be used. Well, normally for cases of bone metastasis, so when the tumor has gone to the bone. Alpha and beta blockers may also be used to control hypertension and symptoms related to hypertension. Metirazine may be used to inhibit catecholamine synthesis, so production of hormones like adrenaline, thus improving symptoms. So where could I see this in the media? Former US President Dwight D. Eisenhower had a pheochromocytoma. This was found on autopsy after his death. This explained a lot of his issues with blood pressure throughout his life and may have also been a contribution towards his cardiomyopathy. A lot of these tumors may be missed, so some people will only be diagnosed through autopsy or may be found by accident when they've been looking for something else. If you want to check out an Instagram page, I recommend Pheo versus Fabulous. Miranda is someone who is experiencing pheochromocytoma and is a current cancer awareness advocate. She has a lot of handy information on her page and shows what it is like to go through pheochromocytoma. The link to her page will be the second link in the references. If you would like to check out a foundation, there is Pheo Para Alliance. This is for both pheochromocytoma and paragangliomas. But they do have some great information about pheochromocytoma, including the stories of people who have experienced this. The link to the Pheo Power Alliance will be the first link in the references. If you want to check out the sources, social media links, or any other links, you can head to anatomyofillness.com. If you enjoyed this episode and would like to hear more, subscribe to be notified about our latest episodes. If you have any ideas for upcoming episodes, you can contact us on Instagram. Otherwise, stick around for the next episode.